Well, my name is Steve Weatherby, and I'm a student at the University of Victoria, and I'm interviewing Bob Rogers about his wartime experiences in Victoria, or in Oak Bay, British Columbia. I'm going to lead off with to ask you, sir, how old you were in 1939, and when did you enlist, and why did you enlist?
Okay. 1939, I was 20 years of age, born, having been born in 1919. I was in university halfway through engineering, and the war came on in 39, and I did 2 years of university, but I decided to enlist because, good question, for a variety of reasons. One, my family were from England. And at that time, I had some 45 cousins in England. I had two brothers. One was in the Air Force in England flying bombers. Another was in the Army in Canada. And I just felt I should join. I couldn't. All my friends were joining up. And I was interviewed to... there were three brigadiers came to the University of Toronto to interview graduate engineers for the... something called the Armored Corps, which General Worthington was setting up in Camp Borden. And while I was only partway through, I thought I'd take a chance, so I asked for an interview and got one. And they asked me, you know, what was I doing there, because I wasn't a graduate. So I said, I told them what I've just told you, and I had been in COTC for 2 years, and I was at school in Toronto, UTS, which university school, I don't even know around. Mm-hmm. And I was school captain there and commander of the cadet force, so I thought I had some basic knowledge of military. Anyway, to my pleasure, I was accepted and granted a commission and went to Camp Borden in January of 1940. And I joined what was then the first CCR, first Canadian Cavalry Regiment recognized, and it was a combination of the 1st Hussars from London, Ontario, who were a reserve regiment who had been mobilized, and a regiment from the RCDs, the Royal Canadian Dragoons. And we were to be part of an armored division going overseas, which we did. We went overseas in October that year.
Which division was that?
That was the 5th Armored Division. Anyway, we got to England, and in subsequent years, I think it was 42 or 3, they broke up the 5th Division, and we became the 1st Armored Brigade, with a brigade with the Fort Garry Horse and the Sherbrooke Fusiliers.
What was your regiment called at that time?
Then we were then the 6th Armored Regiment, 1st Hussars.
Okay. Associated with the London Regiment.
Yeah, that was the carry-on from the London Regiment. Mm-hmm. A lot of our officers were from the London area.
Did the practice of recruiting officers for the Armored Corps as engineers, is that a practice they kept up for very long? It sounds like a high standard. Pretty high standard.
Well, they were starting from scratch, I guess, and Brockville had not been set up at that point, which was all officers training for the infantry later on, and all the army. But I guess they thought that being an engineer, you had some knowledge of something mechanical. Actually, our regiment, the 1st Hussars, was mobilized in August of 39 before war was declared, and they literally went to camp in London with horses. We were to be the 1st Divisional Cavalry with horses. Well, as you know, the 1st Division went over in October or November of 39, and they didn't need any horses, so that was that. So they were shipped to Camp Borden. And we had no equipment, of course. We had a few trucks and some motorcycles, and that's about it.
Well, you were recruited as a an armored officer.
That's right.
But at some point you were suddenly you were going to be cavalry and trained
well,
on horses.
Well, the first of ours was a cavalry regiment. Mm-hmm. But as I say, horses were no longer in play. Mm-hmm. So we were many of the cavalry regiments became armored regiments. We mobilized as armored.
And did you begin your training as an armored regiment in England?
Well, yes. When we went to England in 1941, as I said, in October, and we were stationed in Aldershot initially, in the old 18th century barracks. And we had no equipment. We had a few trucks eventually. And we got our first equipment in, late 42. But we were there. They kept moving us around the south coast of England to make it look like there were lots of troops around. But actually, we were totally unprepared with no equipment. In fact, when we went overseas, some of our men didn't have proper boots or uniforms, that sort of thing. It was a very poor show at the time.
Were you assigned a role in the south of England as defensive troops to repel an invasion?
Yes and no. We were there, and we did route marches and helped put up barbed wire and that sort of thing on the shore of south coast of England, as you know, is strung with barbed wire entanglement and that sort of thing. But no, we weren't on guard duty per se. Mm-hmm. But we were there in the event of some invasion, which was still pending at that time.
Equipped as infantry?
We had rifles and some Bren guns and some Sten guns, but we had nothing. A few the vehicle, the wheel vehicles. Bren gun carriers, we had a couple of those. And we were on the South Downs, and we got our first equipment, which were ram tanks, a Canadian tank. Mm-hmm. And we were living in Brighton at the time, and would move out a squadron at a time onto the South Downs and bivouac there. And we were training in the rams. And they took the rams away from us, the end of 42, or, no, probably 43, and we got Shermans.
What were the rams like?
Well, they had a 2-pound gun, as I recall, and very light armor. They would have been totally useless in any battle. Mm-hmm. In fact, probably. Oh, we might get to it. Our Shermans were totally ineffective against the German
tigers.
Tigers and
panthers.
Panthers, yeah.
Okay, were they useful at least for training?
Well, we learned to train, and the infantry. We trained with the Canadian Scottish and the Sea Force. And Winnipeg Rifles doing army cooperation with the infantry. That was the training we got. And of course, I should have added, when we first got to England in 42, most of us went over to the Salisbury Plains to officer training school. Mm-hmm. And that's really where we got our first training by the British Army. They were mostly veterans from the desert who had come back and gave us training in armored warfare, map reading, radio, wireless, that sort of gunnery, and that sort of thing. And we'd go over to Wales for gunnery practice with our Shermans, for they had Shermans over there. But one incident I remember, they asked were any of us capable of being trained on motorcycles? So I put up my hand because I had motorcycling in Cambodia. But their idea of using a motorcycle was different. I was trained on a big Harley. These were the small little English motorbikes. And they'd start you off from running across the plains and up a steep hill, and you had to go right up until you literally fell over backwards. Or most times you didn't make it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we learned that we learned how to ride a motorcycle after that.
What was the, for what use?
Well, that's a good question. For what use to a lot of our training? We didn't use it at all. Our dispatch riders for the regiment did, but not the officers. Mm.
Okay. Well, did you find that in the end that the training they gave you based on the desert experience was useful?
Yes, it was very much so. I'll give you some instances. This young, actually, was an officer, was telling us about life in an armored corps regiment, traveling in a tank. The tank commander standing up, as you know, in the turret. And he said they were going along one night. And he stopped, and he fell asleep. He was rolling. He said he was rolling around, falling sound asleep, standing in a tank, which I found hard to accept. Well, it wasn't many, a couple of years later, it happened to me many times in France when we'd be moving at night, and I'd be standing in the turret of the tank, sound asleep. It did happen.
Right. That would be when you were following in a convoy.
Yeah, following in a line to stop, and I'd suddenly wake up and I'd been sleeping as I was rolling around, standing in the tank.
How about the driver? Did the driver ever fall asleep?
Well, no, not the... I had communication with the driver, and the driver and the co-driver, oh, not to my knowledge.
At least you stay on course.
Yeah.
What other lessons in terms of, say, cooperation with infantry did you pick up from the men from the desert?
Well, it was. Basically, how we were going to operate after the landing, that only carried, that type of training only carried on during 43. And then, jumping ahead a bit, our regiment, as you may know, was one of two that was equipped with these very secret DD duplex drive tanks, amphibious tanks. So our training then was entirely different. It was based on the landing. And for a full year from 19... the end of 43 until D-Day in June 44, our training was all on beach landing, mm-hmm. which, again, with the infantry, but it was an entirely different type of operation. Our job was to go in, of course, and take out the beach guns and the machine guns prior to the infantry landing on D-Day. So, as I say, we made several landings on the sojourn of England and practicing this operation.
In the DD tent?
In the DD tent. Yeah,
through the water, I mean.
In the water, oh yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
The full 9 yards as far as testing the system.
We had two of our squadrons were amphibious tanks, A and C squadron. B squadron landed dry, headquarters landed dry. But the landing of the amphibious tanks was not entirely successful. We launched, 35 tanks, and about 21 made the beach.
This is at Normandy?
This is in Normandy on D-Day, yeah.
And how about in the practices? Did you have the same, about the same percentage?
No, in the practices, they could delay. We had the odd problem of swamping. But we didn't lose any tanks because you could pick your weather.
Right.
We didn't have, it was a relatively calm day. And the few landings that we made, practice, the weather was calm.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we were hoping to find, but that's not what we got.
Got rough weather on Normandy.
On Normandy, it was force four wind, as I recall. And of the tanks that we lost, they never knew whether they were sunk by enemy fire or whether it was by waves. Certainly, some were by waves coming right over. We were all equipped with all the DD tank people were equipped with Davis escape apparatus, and we were, a lot of the crews of those tanks were sunk, either by mortar fire, which would blast through your canvas wall, or by waves coming in. Many of our crews were picked up and taken back to England.
Mm-hmm. And so do you think the time on training for the landing, a whole year it sounds like, was well spent?
Yes, I would say so. We were very pleased that powers that be said it was, the DD tanks, the surprise in element alone, and the support we were able to give in taking out the big beach guns and machine gun nests was very key to the success of the landing. One thing that I must add, I don't think has ever had full recognition, was the British British engineers, the funnies we called them, the Avros, the assault vehicle Avries, assault vehicle Royal Engineers. And they had these tanks with bridges on the top.
Mm-hmm.
They had flails, which would
for the mines.
The mines, to take up the mines. They had the one that fired the flame out. What was that called?
Crocodile,
I guess, yes. You know more than I do. And anyway, they were very critical in getting us off the beach. Otherwise, we wouldn't have been able to get through without their help.
Well, when you say we, do you mean we generally? Or did they help in your getting your tanks?
Oh, I think any of the tanks, ourselves and the Fort Garry's mm-hmm. in our sector. We landed side by side.
Mm-hmm.
And I all of the tanks.
Did they, do you recall, did they fill in a ditch for you with the what do they call them, fascines?
Fascines?
Well, for instance, did you need a ditch filled in by the funny
tanks?
No,
in my own case, in our regiment, I don't know if you've been to Normandy, but there was a high embankment. And we weren't able to go over. There were places that were lower, and the Avery's put a bridge across.
Uh-huh.
We got to go across the bridge. But by that time, most of the beach had been secured. Most of the concrete pillboxes and machine gun nests had been cleared out. And then we were able to get on the infantry. Meanwhile, we're moving through, and we're taking out any snipers.
Well, back to the earlier training in terms of tank infantry cooperation, were those the regiments that you were practicing with? Were those the regiments that you ended up cooperating with in Normandy?
No, not the ones we were practicing with for the landings were the ones on the South Downs. No, they were other ones.
Mm, okay. And so you stayed with those regiments that you landed with. That was your...
That's right, yeah. And now, mind you, my war only lasted 3 months. I was there from D-Day in June, July, and August, and I was sent back to a group of us were called, when was it? Oh, late on, towards the end, almost the end of August, to go back to join the 6th Armored Division in. And Cooper Bert Hoffmeister, General Hoffmeister, getting ready to go to Far East. And they wanted some trained officers who had some battle experience to go. And so I was called up to brigade one night, and Brigadier said, you're going back to Canada. And first of all, they put us into the Senior War Staff College at RMC. So in September 1st, I was at RMC, and then for 3 months we had a very condensed armored, very condensed RMC training, mm-hmm. which was very, very critical. I only wish I had had it, you know, 3 years earlier. And we're all set to go to Japan or to join the 6th Division. But in the meantime, that fall, the 6th Division was demobilized. It never did go over. So I ended up in Ottawa pushing a desk around from, through 1945. So the end of my war was the end of August 1944.
Still quite a bit of action.
Well, actually,
a disappointment.
Most of the action was, I just, knowing you were coming, I was looking up First and Lars' history book, which I'm sure you have access to, the war diary. When I left to come back to Canada, of the 35 officers that landed, there were 6 of us left. We had 15 killed and 15 wounded, and there were 5 or 6 left. Now, some of them had come, the wounded had come back in. Mm-hmm. We literally had that much of a turnover of our officers. We only lost 2 on D-Day, and about 20-some-odd other ranks were killed. But on the 11th of June, which is our bad Black Day, we were almost totally wiped out. We lost all of squadron and half squadron. We lost about 8 officers and about 60 men.
What was the name of that action?
That was a battle with the Queen's Own Highlanders on June the 11th. We were told that we were to attack. The Germans were at the 12th SS Division, the Armored Corps, the Dryugen Division.
Yes.
And they were... apparently, the word was, we got later, planning to attack and drive us back to the beaches. We were just a few miles in at the time. Mm-hmm. And so we were set up on 1 o'clock. On, first of all, it was to be the 11th, and then it was pushed forward to noon on the... No, it was to be on the 12th, and it was pushed forward to noon on the 11th. And with the Queen's Own, we were to attack the... 12th SS Division. Well, it was like shooting fish in a barrel for them. We couldn't. These were tigers and panthers, mm-hmm. and place called Le Mesnil Patrie, and Noria and Besson, two little villages. And between these villages, the jury was embedded there, dug in, and well, they just literally wiped out the whole squadron. And a half of a ace squadron, and the Queen's Own lost a whole company and a half of men. It was a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the only tank, I think I can say the only tank-to-tank warfare that our regiment saw. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, it was more just support for the infantry as they worked throughout through in the Belgium.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you already have an idea, I suppose, going into the Normandy invasion, that the German tanks were far superior?
No, not really. We were very proud of our tanks. We had these Shermans, and some of them had 17-pound guns on them, which was heavier than anything we had had before.
Mm-hmm.
And we were told this was state-of-the-art equipment, and it was for the Allies. That's the best we had. But we learned the hard way that there was no match for even the Panther, let alone the 88. The Tiger, if you get hit by 88, that was it, so right through. Whereas our, even the 17-pounder would bounce off sizes on the 88 depending if we hit them.
Hmm. What was that like for you to know that you were...
We didn't know. We were young and innocent. Not, you know, nothing had happened to us. But, we felt quite confident. And actually, in fairness, they did the job they were intended to do on the landing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they did take it. There were no tanks. There were these big padded guns. But with ourselves, think, 90% used the tanks, which were the beaches. So they did serve that purpose. I guess in hindsight, they didn't look ahead far enough what happens when we meet armor to armor. Mm-hmm. Because in the desert, the British and the Americans had success with the Sherman tanks mm-hmm. against Jerry, although I don't know, I wasn't there, so I don't know how it went.
Right. Did armored regiments, as I understand it, some armored regiments were in independent brigades and some were part of armored divisions?
Well, we were an independent army. We were an independent, there were two. We were the first army brigade, armored brigade, and there was a second armored brigade. But then there was the, I think the 4th Armored Division stayed as a full armored division. They went to Italy as an armored division. Mm-hmm. But we were not. We were an armored brigade and served the three regiments, the infantry regiments. As I say, we had the Queen's Own, and then on D-Day, the Regina Rifles and Winnipeg, and the Canadian Scottish.
So, what division were they from?
They were the 7th Infantry Division.
7th? Second.
Yeah, 7th.
What was 7th Infantry Brigade?
Yeah, infantry. They were the 7th Infantry Brigade, yeah.
In what division?
3rd Division.
3rd Division, and that was an infantry?
That was an infantry brigade in the 3rd Division.
Okay.
And as far as I know, they stayed with them all the way up through France and into mm-hmm. Holland.
Well, when you went over to France, were you expecting, was your regiment expecting to be functioning solely as infantry support, or did you imagine a great armored breakout?
No, I think we knew, because all our training had been army co-op with the infantry. I don't think we anticipated, or we didn't. There was no training where it was to be armor against armor.
Right.
We were trained to support the infantry. And I must add another dimension. We had great support from the Air Force, Typhoons. A Canadian or American, I'm not sure which they were, because, well, there were some of each, actually. And we got held up, and the infantry were held up by a dug in 88. We'd fire tracer bullets, and these typhoons would come right down. And in all cases, cleared out the dug in tank. Very successful.
How close was your connection with them? How were you able to call them up?
Yes, actually we could. I was adjutant of the regiment at the time, and I had a link back to brigade headquarters, and we could call up Air Force support, and hard to remember now whether it was an hour or half an hour or whatever, but very, very quickly we'd get air support, because now this is into late June and July, when the Air Force literally were in France. They came in within the first week. They had planes, they had airfields in France.
Okay.
For the RAF, the RCAF and the RAF.
So you would give them a map reference?
Give them a map reference, and then would fire our tracers, and they'd come right in. In fact, I well remember on occasion, more than once, at night when we were in lager, in the back of it, some of these pilots would come up to see us. And we had lots of souvenirs, German pistols and helmets and God knows what all.
And we're happy to share.
And we'd give them to the. But then all of a sudden, Jerry was sort of mortaring us. And they got the hell out of there. We just crawl under a tank.
Yeah.
That was the way of life in those days, every night. When we were under constant fire, some weeks, Jerry was headed artillery back, and with shelling the beach, and first so many miles inland was always under mortar fire. But these boys who had given, you know, the nerve they had flying right into the teeth of these guns, but they didn't like when they were on the feet.
Right. They probably felt invincible in the plane.
That's exactly.
but not visiting you in the mess.
That's right.
Not that you. Well, I guess you probably didn't exactly have a mess. How did you eat with your crew, or did you eat with the other officers?
No, we ate with the crew.
Yeah.
We were on fuel rations, and but we didn't, as you say, we didn't suffer. We did it very well. There was never any lack of food or water or whiskey. Calvados. Mm-hmm. We liberated several German messes, and there's always lots of booze. But we could also brew up a pot of tea anytime we like. The poor bloody infantry, their ankles are greased in mud, and would be sitting there brewing up a pot of tea on the back of the tank any time.
Using the heat from the engine?
Hmm?
Using the heat from the engine? Or
no,
oh, God.
Yeah, a little portable
right.
burner.
Paraffin or something.
Paraffin, yeah.
Right, okay. Well, in retrospect, do you think that the training you received in England was could have been better, or was adequate to what you actually experienced?
Our training was very good. I must say that because I have another story to tell you. Now, remember, some of our boys had been in the Army since 1939, and this is 1944 when the first action we saw. But we had had very thorough training, particularly for the landing. However, I mentioned the 11th of June. The night before, we received reinforcements, tanks, and men to bring us up to full strength, because we had lost quite a few. I think it was about 60 men came up. And an equivalent number of tanks, so we were fully equipped. And I was adjutant, so I had to, when these men were brought up, I had to assign them to the various tanks. And it happened, one sergeant said to me, "Sir," he said, "I'm not complaining," but he said, "I haven't been in a tank since I was in an old tank in Camp Borden years ago. I've been the charge of the officers' mess at the reinforcement unit in England for the last 2 years." He said, "I wouldn't know what to do in a tank." He had no training whatsoever. So he said, "Look, give me a rifle or a Sten gun, I'll be able to go with the infantry." I said, "I'm sorry, you're all I've got to deal with." So what I did was mix, and then it was a wireless operator, who was the co-driver, the wireless operator who was in the turret, hadn't had wireless training for 2 years. In other words, all the reinforcements we got had virtually no up-to-date training.
And when again was this?
This was the 10th of June, the night before, and the next day we went in, and virtually all of them were killed.
Well, that seems like
it was an appalling situation.
Yeah.
We had no trained reinforcements, none whatsoever. They literally scraped the barrel from CACRU, the Canadian Armored Corps Training Reinforcement Center. Some of them had arrived from Canada a short while before. Some of them, like the sergeant, had been in the training camp for 2 years and had no fighting training at all.
That must have seemed astonishing to you at the time.
Well, I was shattered. In fact, I almost got cashiered because I wrote a poem. It's the only time in my life I've ever written a poem. And to tell this story, and I raised hell at brigade headquarters. I'm a captain at this point.
Right, a lowly captain.
And but then I came back. Well, I came back to Canada, I guess, when I really sounded off, because it was a bloody disgrace. You may have read Connie Smythe. Does that name ring a bell to you?
Mm-hmm.
He sounded off the same story. And he, because of who he was, he got a lot of press. But that was an appalling situation. And of course, at that time, the political situation in Canada was to do with zombies, whether they would be sent over or not.
Mm-hmm.
And they, when we were in RMC, we went to Petawawa to see some troops in training. Well, we were disgusted because they were zombies, fully trained, fully equipped, but not being sent overseas. And I had just come back from seeing a situation which was absolutely disgrace to our country. But that's the way it was.
Mm.
I don't know whether the infantry were bad or not, but we were, well, we actually, some of our recruits, the reinforcements, were infantry trained, not armor trained at all.
I'm wondering whether you took measures, developed techniques to counteract, to deal with German firepower, tanks, and I guess they had pretty good anti-tank weapons as well.
That's right. So, well, they used their 88s as anti-tank. They were not necessarily on a tank. They had them as anti-tank weapons.
Were they usually towed if they weren't on a tank? Or did they have them mounted on
self-propelled? They had them mounted on a vehicle of some kind.
Mm-hmm. So did you as a regiment, or did you develop techniques? Did you learn how to fight against them?
Not really. We never had any. As I say, we never anticipated tank-to-tank warfare. Ours was purely infantry support. So no, there was no training per se.
But you must have anticipated anti-tank guns.
Oh yeah, we did, and that's when I said we'd use our tracer bullets. We had armor-piercing for HE. Tracer, and we'd use our tracer bullets to locate the dug-in tank or a gun, whatever it was, or machine gun.
I've read about a shift in tactics which involved changing from the original idea of tanks going ahead of the infantry, which was found to be ineffective because of the anti-tank guns, to tanks kind of supporting from the side, the infantry going first with the tanks along the side.
That was more our style of operation. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The only major battle that I was in, as I say, was on the 11th of June,
mm-hmm.
and I survived. But in the period from D-Day through to the end of August, we would have two or three tanks allocated to a troop or a company of infantry. We weren't operating as a regiment. We were totally dispersed mm-hmm. throughout the 7th Brigade, both ourselves and the Fort Carys and the Sherpas.
Okay. Now I talked with.
So we were more with the infantry, to answer your question,
right.
than as an armored unit, fighting as an armored unit. We were strictly infantry following.
Well, I talked with. I guess I got the doctrine of armored warfare from Major General Tedley.
Oh yeah, Jim. Have you talked to him lately?
Yeah, I just.
I hear he's in a home. Somebody told me he's, senior citizen.
That's right, in Sydney. It's a very nice place.
How is he? Yeah, in Sydney.
He seemed very, very good. A little favoring one leg, I guess.
Yeah, I gather he has a leg problem. I haven't seen him for a while.
But it's a nice place. So I was just saying that Major General Tedley was giving me the doctrine of armored warfare and
right.
saying that if you use them one at a time, you lose them one at a time,
mm-hmm.
and obviously not approving of the piecemeal use of tanks.
Right.
But it sounds like you were basically trained in
yeah.
You wouldn't see it quite the same way.
No. I don't know. Jim had a very long and distinguished career, as you know, and I don't know whether he was in the desert or not, but I mean, that was tank-to-tank warfare,
mm-hmm.
whereas ours in Western Europe was strictly infantry and tank together.
Mm-hmm. did you ever, in terms of the superiority again of the German tanks, did you ever examine their tanks? Did you ever look at wrecked Canadian tanks to see what their guns could do to you?
To answer your question, we did have the odd success and knocked out the odd German tank. Mm-hmm. And of course, first thing we wanted to do was what you'd examine it. And so we had knowledge of what we were up against. But there was no question that they outgunned us, and they had a heavier armor than we had. So we could sit shooting at each other and we'd fall short, and they could knock us out at much greater range than we had, the capacity than we had.
Did you adopt the practice of putting spare treads on your tank?
Oh, yes. Yeah, anything you hang on your tank to give you, which I think is effective because one never knows until after the fact. But I think by and large, once we got settled into France, we did several things, such as hanging spare treads all around the tank for extra arm protection, because we realized we were outgunned at that point.
Did you learn right away? Were you prepared for the German tactic of perhaps giving up a position relatively easily, but then counterattacking with much vigor?
Well, as I say, my experience was only a 3-month experience, so we didn't know at the time. I used the 11th of June experience, and then there were several others similar. Whether we were directed to take the offensive, or whether higher command knew that we were about to be attacked, and we were set up to halt the attack. Remember, a captain doesn't know very much except what's going on in his immediate small area. You don't see the larger picture until after the fact, and you either learn or you're told about it. What the strategy was.
Okay. After this engagement you had on the June the 11th and 12th, how did you reconstitute? How long did it take for your regiment to get back into full action?
Well, we were pulled back at that time, and it was, my memory fails me. I'd say a week or two we were pulled out. But we were never... We were always, in 3 months, we were never pulled back for full rest. We were always forward ready to move to the infantry. Because it was a constant, after Caen, Falaise, it was a constant movement. Mm-hmm. And my regiment really got no leave. We weren't pulled back for a month or 2 weeks or even a week.
But you were pulled out for a week to
recollect yourself. Well, after the June 11th, we were pulled out to reestablish ourselves as a unit, and we did get more reinforcements. Mm-hmm. And the situation was just the same. We were not getting trained reinforcements to fill in. Mm-hmm. And as I say, our casualty rate, it's all in the book. In the war diary, but they had some very difficult shows going up through France here. But individually with the infantry again, not tank to tank.
Well, were you in a squadron that was spared, or were you in a squadron that was...
No, I was in headquarters squadron, and we were trapped. The Colonel Loss's tank came in with my tank. But B squadron got wiped out entirely. Mm-hmm. We lost them all. So there was some were taken prisoners. We got Harry Harrison, who was a captain. He was freed in when Paris was liberated. He was in a German hospital in Paris. Mm-hmm. So we did get some of them back.
Right. So the others simply came up from Were the officers trained in that case, that your reinforcement officers?
No, the reinforcement officers were not. Some of them were infantry officers, actually.
Really?
Yeah. Which is, it was a sad state of affairs. We, you know, we're very proud of what the Canadian Army achieved, but there were some awful boo-boos made. Mm-hmm. And, you know, looking back.
Well, that seems to be, I mean, I realize I... I guess there was resentment or anger about that. Was it directed at French Canadians, or was it directed at higher command for not doing the planning?
I guess any bad feeling was political. It was a political situation. No, because the Van Dudes were there, and the Chaudières and Regiment of Quebec. There were some very good French speaking regiments, all volunteers. But the zombies were mostly from Quebec, unfortunately, and maybe some from Ontario, I don't know, or the rest of Canada. But any resentment that we had at that time was political, because we knew it was a political decision.
The government in power.
It was the government in power. Mackenzie King, in my book, should go down as a disaster, although he's supposed to be the greatest prime minister we ever had, according to some historian. I don't buy it.
Not from where you were
standing. Not from where I stood, no.
That's right. Well, just in terms of life at the front, you said you pulled back a little bit. How far back from the actual front line?